I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. It's December 17th, 2024. Two neighboring towns in the D.C. area, Bladensburg and Cheverly, cross swords over annexing a large tract of land slated for development, and it is wild. The George Washington University Hospital in D.C. avoided a strike by its medical residents at the 11th hour. Wooden High School in Montgomery County reopens racial wounds after a student wrote the N-word on a school desk, and the school principal waited too long to take action. A Silver Spring church on Georgia Avenue shows off advanced plans to build 160 affordable housing units on its property, taking advantage of a new zoning law. And Washington Post's longtime local columnist, Petula Dvorak, ends her popular column. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by the Political Science Program at UMBC Shady Grove, where you'll learn a strong foundation in public policy, pre-law, and international affairs for an impactful career in a number of essential areas. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society moving precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now.
When I fall down, I will stay down.
Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band for the moment spanning red, blue, and purple states, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synths, Ben Heath, guitar and synths, and Montgomery County's very own planning board commissioner, James Hedrick, on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and available on Bandcamp. Sting Pain Index. The town of Bladensburg has announced its intention to annex a 113-acre parcel of county land where Prince George's County Hospital used to sit until 2021. The hospital has moved to new digs, and the parcel, which abuts the neighboring town of Cheverly, is the location of a large new real estate development project expected to produce 1,300 apartments, a 70-room hotel, 40,000 square feet of retail, 70,000 square feet of office space, and a new town center. Prince George's County leaders and the development company have been working together with officials from Cheverly, where County Council Chair Jolene Ivy lives, to come up with this big plan. But Bladensburg, which is a larger town by land mass, though smaller by population and less wealthy, has laid claim to the economic benefits expected to come. The town of Cheverly, which has been working with Prince George's County to push through the development project with the expectation that it would be the one to annex the land once the development was completed, naturally disagrees. Casey Muniene is the mayor of the town of Cheverly.
The site development took took hold with RDA in about 2021. They started looking for developers that could develop the site. We worked with RDA and ultimately the developers that were chosen, which was Urban Atlantic and Home Team 5. They had a requirement to reach out to the municipality that is closest and most impacted by the development site. That was the town of Cheverly. And so we worked with them lock and step every step of the way to make sure we ended up with development that our community wanted to see, that was not going to be destructive to our community, but uplift our community as well as have a great economic base. We were asked by the county council woman, by the county executive's office, and by the owners, RDA, to hold off on annexing the property because they wanted to complete the development first. This is the county's investment. And so, of course, there's an expectation that they would come up with a different tax differential so that they can get their money back. They can recoup the investment that they've made. And we understood that. In terms of the latest that's happened with Blaineburg, I would say that's come about in the last 60 days max, and to our knowledge, the last couple of weeks. We were notified as a town that Blaineburg had moved to annex the property through the courts. They have created some sort of gerrymandered map that shows them including 295 and a small piece of land to the right of that so that they could create an enclave, which would allow them to then say they were contiguous enough to annex the property. And so now it's kind of left up to a judge to determine if that will work. They're trying to use a precedent that's been set by a municipality in Prince George's County, but it's kind of apples to oranges. If you look at the Forest Heights precedent is what they're looking at. The site that those folks annexed did not already have the assigned developer moving forward with another municipality. So it is nothing similar to that, and hopefully a judge will see that. We issued a cease and desist to the town of Blaineburg. It looks like based on their press conference today, they're going to continue to move forward.
What is the law in these matters?
So for this particular law that addresses unincorporated areas, because it doesn't have an owner except for the county, she can move forward with annexation, and a judge may decide based on that precedent that they could move forward. Because the requirements for this type of annexation is usually that you get 25% of the property owners to agree so that you don't have a hostile annexation, or that it is contiguous, which they are not. And then you can move forward with annexation. But you do not have to send out, you don't have to do the community engagement that's required for the development planning. And my attitude is just because it's not required doesn't mean you shouldn't do it.
So their case is only on contiguity, right? It cannot be on 25% of residents agreeing because this site is owned by the county.
Right, and the county is not agreeing. So all they've got is whether or not a judge thinks this map makes sense to them. On Thursday, they're supposed to have a public hearing where they will hear from their residents about their opinions about moving forward. And then we'll go from there if they decide to move forward. We issued the cease and desist. We informed them in the cease and desist that we would be filing a lawsuit the following day.
Okay. What is at stake?
This is our opportunity to really, really show developers we know what we're doing here. And we've done it in such an organized way that it's really been what I would hope would be the template to move forward and actually attract more developers to the area. In many ways, this is heartbreaking because there's always a history and a stigma around people of color and communities of color and whether or not they can get along and whether or not they're able to lead properly. And this just really muddies those waters once again. The coin term is often crabs in a barrel. And that's just really disappointing.
Mayor Casey Muniene, thank you.
Thank you.
I followed up with Josh Kurtz of Maryland Matters, who wrote a story about this face-off.
The law is interesting because it actually, to my surprise, it gives municipalities, it puts municipalities on equal footing with county governments, which was a surprise to me when it comes to kind of some of these land use questions. I think this would be, I think the fact that Prince George's County owns the land is almost a complicating factor because, you know, if this was private land or if this was, you know, land that somebody was trying to get rid of, if Bladensburg came in and wanted to annex it, it would probably be easier, but the fact that, Cheverly was perceived as being ahead in line, and the fact that Prince George's County wants Cheverly to take it over, and in fact, this development is kind of predicated on the idea that Cheverly is going to take it over, makes it more difficult. But kind of in the abstract, Bladensburg thinks they're within their rights, and I think they might be. They've done some clever things to argue, that it could be contiguous, by the annexation plan includes some right-of-ways and some, highway medians and stuff like that. And that's kind of how they get to this contiguousness.
I understand the tax benefits. I understand high-end development bringing in higher-income residents. Is there anything else that's going on for Bladensburg to do this?
I think there's probably a certain amount of jealousy and envy. Cheverly is home to many powerful Prince George's politicians and former politicians. I think it's perceived as being a more affluent community, though it's a very diverse middle class community. It's right by, it has its own metro station. I haven't been able to figure out what the exact genesis of where this idea came from, but I mean, I think it's a good development. And so, I mean, I think it's just a naked land grab.
I heard that the mayor of Cheverly is running for the District 5 seat recently vacated by Jolene Ivey, and that the mayor of Bladensburg has endorsed somebody that is running against her.
That's certainly a side issue to this, absolutely. I think there are at least three or four candidates who are going to run for that.
Josh Kurtz, thank you.
All right, thank you.
The George Washington University Hospital, which houses one of the nation's premier trauma centers, avoided a strike by its medical residents at the last minute. The hospital's 450 medical residents had formed a union for the first time in 2023 and had been in 15-month-long negotiations to get their first contract. Finally, 2 weeks ago, they voted to strike for 3 days on December 17th, 18th, and 19th. Because the hospital administration was not yielding on demands for higher pay, longer parental leave, and $5,000 in mental health treatment reimbursement.
We work long hours under immense pressure, managing life or death decisions on minimal sleep. And for many of us, the toll this takes is enormous. For our beloved colleague and friend, Dr. William West, it was fatal. Will died by suicide in March of 2024, leaving behind a call for change. In the last 4 years of training, we've had at least 7 residents and medical students in the DMV area alone who have lost their lives to suicide. How many more do we have to lose before GW realizes this is a humanitarian crisis? We've asked for support, we've asked for help, and GW has chosen to look the other way and to reject our demand for a mental health care benefit that would cost them very little, but would make an enormous impact on our lives.
We are here because the system that relies on us has failed us and is continuing to fail us and all of the communities that we care for. This is not a decision that we have made lightly. We are healers, caregivers, and professionals who have dedicated our lives to serving our patients and communities. Right now, many of us are barely getting by on as little as $15 an hour in one of the most expensive cities in the country. Many of us are struggling to afford rent, to buy groceries, to support our families. We are working 80-hour work weeks, pouring everything we have into this profession. And yet, GW has not met our needs.
The American healthcare system is broken in many ways, including in the way we train doctors. To be a full-fledged doctor, students graduating from medical school spend 3 to 7 years in residency, an apprentice arrangement, where they work under a hospital's attending physicians and surgeons who specialize in their areas of choice: neurology, cardiology, internal medicine, others. During this time, residents often work 80 hours a week for relatively low pay. Starting residency salaries could be in the mid-$60,000, which in a high-cost metro like Washington, D.C. can be really hard. After a few years, it might go up to mid-80,000s, nothing close to the 225,000 median income American doctors have. The Service Employees International Union, SEIU, which has set up a committee for interns and residents, has had success in organizing medical residents, interns, and fellows. The committee has 34,000 members nationwide. But when these residents become full-fledged doctors, they are no longer unionized and are instead governed by the American Medical Association, their membership organization. In Montgomery County, Wooden High School is at the center of a racism controversy. Here is Timo Taiwo, co-president of the school's Black Students Union.
A couple weeks ago, on a Monday, student went, stepped away from their desk, and by the time they returned, someone had scribbled the N-word across their desk. The teacher had taken a photo of the picture and erased it. And the student went home, told their parent what had happened, and their parent then reached out to our principal in the school to see if any further investigation was taking place. And the parent was let know that the incident was being investigated, but no message was sent out to the community. On Thursday, the Black Student Union was made aware of the situation, and we were let know that administration wanted our input on what we would like to see happen, which we then responded with an email sent to our administration, some teachers in the school, as well as some Central County officials. And in that letter, we let them know that we were past the talking stage and felt that we had given our input more than enough times and that it should be apparent what we would like. And at the bottom of this message, we had attached the action plan, which we had first written and presented to our administration in March of 2023. The action plan had four parts: creating materials to be shown to students, like anti-racism material, to have more comprehensive training for staff, to increase visibility, meaning sending out community letters as soon as these incidents occur and making it students aware of what the repercussions for their actions would be, which this is not a crazy ask because we've seen before in our school multiple times where a hate symbol was drawn around the school. We would receive a community message saying earlier this day, this occurred, or yesterday this occurred.
At Wooten, you were saying that there is a longstanding problem of this kind of racial harassment, or is it generally more harassment, more including, you know, anti-Semitism and all of that?
I think there's equal amounts of acts of hate towards various groups. The discrepancy comes with how these incidents are handled.
Do you know exactly what happened on that day with the student writing the N-word? Did the teacher remove the desk?
Because the teacher erased it from the desk, I believe that it was written with pencil.
Oh, it was written in pencil and the teacher erased it. And the class period was over, so the student that was a target just walked away.
Yes.
Now, since then, the principal of Wooten High School has been put on administrative leave. Do you think that's an appropriate step to have taken?
We had been working with our past principal for more than 2 years, and we thought that we had reached a place where our concerns and what we'd want to see have been heard. So to see that not implemented, despite going through multiple levels of the school system, it seems that if our past principal wasn't able to work with us, that somebody should be in the position who serves the community.
Do you think Wooden has a worse case of this than other high schools, or is it sort of similar in your view everywhere?
I do not think that Wooten experiences more of these racist incidents than other schools. I just think Wooten is more willing to speak up about what's going on, and there's more staff at our school to support our efforts.
What about schools that are Black majority, Hispanic majority schools? are they different?
When I had met with the Minority Scholars Program, students from almost every single school in the county had mentioned having similar experiences. But a lot of students also shared that they didn't really feel comfortable speaking up or out to their administration or even their peers for fear of being ridiculed.
Have you talked with your new acting principal, Dr. Joseph Bostic?
Yes, I have. The BSU leadership team met with Dr. Bostic towards the end of last week. And it seems very promising. We, as a collective, are excited to have him at our school.
Timothy, well, thank you for taking the time. I'm sorry this happened.
Thank you for taking the time to speak to me.
The congregation of the Silver Spring United Methodist Church on Georgia Avenue in the Woodside neighborhood just north of downtown is set to vote next month in January 2025 on project plans to build 160 affordable housing units on the land around the church, taking advantage of a relatively new zoning law called the Faith Zoning Text Amendment, which allows faith organizations to build homes more densely than would be allowed in a neighborhood by regular zoning law. The project will dramatically change the church property, which sits on Georgia Avenue between Ballard and Noyce Streets and First Avenue. The First Avenue side will have a handful of townhomes, and hiding behind them will be 4- and 5-story apartment buildings that will have the bulk of the affordable housing. After the congregation approves the plans, the church and the developer will apply for low-income housing tax credits, which will build the seed money for construction and thereafter the permits from the county. We will be following. The Washington Post's longtime local columnist Petula Dvorak ended her popular column after 15 years last Sunday, December 15th. Dvorak's columns in the Post were always interesting, insightful, and often highlighted those who were neglected. She will continue writing for the newspaper. I've invited her to join us on I Hate Politics to talk about her tenure. If you want her to join, ask her on social media. That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producer Adama Gay, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Sting Pain Index, a band that straddles Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, and Texas. Jeff Amos on guitar and lead vocals, Scotty Lowen on guitar and bass, Sam Legrone on bass and synth, Ben Heath on guitar and synth, and Montgomery County's own James Hedrick on the drums. Their new album is called Songs About Fracking and is now available on Bandcamp. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. See you next time.
Like a trophy left by a stray cat, I prick my finger on the sharp part and say the F word to and at myself and just throw it away. Evidence lacking any fingerprints. Tongue, I'll hold my tongue, I'm on my knees.
love.